and Fran Vesco, who has appeared before numerous Senate hearings in the past, represents the Senate, excuse me, the National Breast Cancer Coalition. And I'm going to kind of take this out of turn, since I understand you have a plane to catch, and so we're going to let you go ahead first, Fran.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Senators Mack and Feinstein, for holding this important hearing and for inviting me to testify. As you know, the National Breast Cancer Coalition is a grassroots advocacy organization dedicated to the eradication of breast cancer through action, advocacy, and change. We are 350 organizational members and 41,000 individual members strong and growing. And our members across the country, and certainly in California and Florida, certainly appreciate the support that we have received from both of you in our campaign to eradicate breast cancer. And one of our prime goals is to increase the influence of breast cancer survivors and other breast cancer activists over research, public policy, and clinical trials. And we appreciate your willingness to include our perspective on the complex privacy and discrimination issues that we're discussing today. You asked Dr. Klausner and Dr. Collins a question about money, and I have a number that I can give you for breast cancer research.
For some reason, I'm not surprised.
We believe, and we are actually launching a new campaign that certainly between the National Cancer Institute and the Department of Defense peer-reviewed breast cancer research program, by the year 2000, over the next 3 years, we should spend $2.6 billion on breast cancer research. That's $2.6 billion for the 2.6 million women living with the disease in this country today. Now, my testimony is going to be fairly short because Dr. Collins said a lot of what I was going to say. But what I can do is I can tell you from personal experience what a diagnosis of breast cancer does to your life. It turns it upside down. It turns it inside out. When I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 1987, my son David, who is here with me today, was 14 months old. Now, I had to contend with a life-threatening illness, life-threatening treatment for that illness. Women who are diagnosed with this disease, and I know that you're aware of this, Senator Mack, have a seemingly unending barrage of difficulties to face. And on top of all that, we face discrimination in insurance and employment. I have met many women over the past few years who are dying of breast cancer. Too many of them have spent their last days worrying about insurance coverage. And now a new indignity. Some of us pass on susceptibility to this disease to our families. And the very possibility of that may deprive our families of health care coverage and employment possibilities. We're talking about discrimination not because you have a disease. We're not talking about pre-existing condition. We're talking about discrimination based on the possibility that you might someday get a disease. Now, as scientists, as activists, and as policymakers, we have an incredible responsibility to the women, men, and the children of this country. And unfortunately, we can't legislate away breast cancer, because I know if we could do that, it would have been done a long time ago. But we can legislate and provide safeguards for those who face this disease, for those whose lives have been torn apart by this epidemic. And this hearing is an important step in fulfilling that responsibility, but we have to make certain that we act on what we learn today. Now, the issue of genetic testing and discrimination on predisposition to disease is extremely important to breast cancer activists. As you know, in the fall of 1993, the National Breast Cancer Coalition's 2.6 million signature campaign culminated in a march to the White House, a presidential ceremony, and a national action plan on breast cancer. As Dr. Collins explained, that's a collaborative effort. It's representatives from the private and public community, scientists, industry, government, consumers, devising plans of action around only six priorities that we believe are crucial to eradicating breast cancer, and one of only six is implementation of a comprehensive plan to address the needs of individuals carrying breast cancer susceptibility genes. Now, we also had the National Breast Cancer Coalition, our Congressional Forum Series had as its most recent forum a discussion on the policy implications of isolation of the breast cancer gene. We have developed a position paper which I would like to have entered into the record today, and that position I will outline today in my testimony. We have been working with Dr. Mary Claire King, Dr. Maimon Cohen, a number of others on the issue of genetics for some time, and most recently with Dr. Collins and now Dr. Klausner on preparing for the public announcement of the study dealing with the Ashkenazi Jewish population. Clearly, this is an issue of vital importance to us, and clearly, science is speeding along the path of genetic discoveries at breakneck speed. But policy lags behind. We now face the availability of testing, a pre-symptomatic test for heritable breast cancer risk. But before we talk about that, I would like personally to put this into perspective. This test may only identify women who are at increased risk of breast cancer because of family history. Yet those women make up only 5 to 10% of women who get breast cancer. As Dr. Klausner mentioned, women who test negative must still be told that doesn't mean they're home free. They still face almost a 1 in 8 lifetime risk of breast cancer. They have to be told to follow appropriate guidelines for screening. And most importantly, because I've read otherwise in some news reports, we have to make certain people recognize this is not a test to detect breast cancer. And it's not a test that will prevent breast cancer. It's not a test that will cure disease. It's a test to show that you may have a predisposition for getting breast cancer. Now, women with strong family histories who test positive for the gene, the effects of this must be very carefully considered. Because the test may tell these women with strong family histories that they have as much of an 85% chance of getting a disease for which we don't know how to prevent. We don't know what to tell these women to do to prevent breast cancer, and we don't know how to cure the disease. We have to carefully monitor these women for signs of cancer development, but we really don't have any methods of detection that work for every woman. And we don't know how well methods of detection we do have will work in women with strong family histories. There are some studies that indicate they may not work as well. We, in this area, as in too many areas of breast cancer, have too little information. But breast cancer patients and their families want a test available, but they want a valid and reliable test available. They want to know whether this test in fact works. They want to know what counseling will work and whether counseling will work. It's imperative that this testing be done within research protocols. That is extremely important to us. We want to make certain that these research protocols are available around the country so that all of the families who want to participate can. Now, I'm not talking about the snapshot study dealing with the Ashkenazi Jewish situation. I'm talking about the broader follow-up studies. And I'm talking about studies for tests for mutations aside from the Ashkenazi situation. I'm making a plea here today to women across this country, please participate in these research protocols. Because while genetic predisposition may impact a small percentage of women with breast cancer, we believe that these discoveries will lead to even broader answers to this disease. And women with strong family histories, women owe it to all women to participate in these research protocols so that we can get the answers that will help all of us and help all of our children. Of course, this raises insurance issues on a number of levels. One level is coverage for participation in research protocols. You've heard a great deal I'm certain about insurance companies not wanting to cover experimental treatments. And the problem is that too often they won't cover participating, the costs associated with participating in high quality research protocols to determine whether something is experimental or whether it works. We need to make certain that insurance companies, that third-party payers, cover participation in clinical trials. It makes economic sense and it makes social sense. We support the guidelines that were adopted, that Dr. Collins mentioned, that were adopted by the ELSI Working Group and the National Action Plan on Breast Cancer. We believe that we have to deal with insurance discrimination for predisposition to disease now. I was also going to talk to you about the article in the Sunday New York Times Magazine by the author whose father, uncles, and I believe cousins had died young of heart disease. That author decided he didn't want to have a test. He didn't want to know what happened to him. But it did mention individuals who did not want their name made public. I was also at the July hearing, and I was with the women who did not want their name made public. I know too many women who are involved in that situation, and we're not just talking about testing. I've had representatives of insurance companies say to me, we're not going to make people get tests, but they'll ask you if you've had a test. And they also will ask family history information. Often that's just as good as asking someone to get a test.
Fran, if I could, because of time, could I get you to wrap up so I can move on to the other members of the panel?
What I wanted to say is that policy cannot afford to continue to lag behind science here, and that we have to build on these hearings and move forward to meet the needs of all of the citizens of this country. And I wanted to thank you for inviting the National Breast Cancer Coalition to participate. Thank you.
Thank you.